Hi there, and welcome to the Sports Fans TV Cricket Fan Show. My name's Steve, and I'm here to talk to you about the just finished second Ashes Test between England and Australia, which has just concluded this morning in UK time in Adelaide. And not surprisingly, as we were going into day five, England weren't able to see out batting the whole day and weren't able to get a positive result of any sort out of the game. No great surprise, losing Joe Root to the last ball of the fourth day was probably the death knell for anything England might have tried to do today. And it was no surprise that despite a pretty impressive rearguard effort, particularly by Butler and Wokes, and then some of the tail, Robinson hung around for quite a long time, facing some very tricky bowling and some good bowlers on a final day pitch, England weren't able to see out the whole game. So, as I say, no great surprise, really. It would have been a miraculous win. But there's, even though the test went as we expected it probably would, and as we expected it probably would before the ball was bowled, there's still plenty to get our teeth into in terms of the test. So let's start at the start. The Australians won the toss and had a bat, and it was a good bat, good batting track. It looked like it was good conditions for batting. That said, England, I thought, bowled quite poorly in the first innings. And it's been interesting in the post-match interviews that Joe Root has come out and effectively said, we bowled quite poorly and we got it wrong in the early part of the game. And I'll come back to that because I think that may have an implication for selection for the third test on Boxing Day. But you know, Australia, let's quickly talk about Australia in this test. They batted very well. They got close to 500 batting once. They imposed themselves with the ball on England and were unable to force the follow on. Chose not to. I thought it might have been a little bit of a risk by Smith. And maybe if Root hadn't been out overnight going into the fifth day, then that might have been a little bit more of a hairline decision. But as it was, Australia just had a bit of fun, got a few more runs and set England a mammoth total to chase that there was never going to be possible. So it was really just a matter of a question of time and if Australia had enough time to bowl England out, which they clearly did and clearly felt confident that they did and that they would. So Australia were very good. Nessa and Richardson came in for Cummings and Hazelwood. Clearly not quite in the same class. Richardson ended up playing pretty well. He got five wickets in the second innings, and I think he can be pretty confident that he will remain in the side for the next test. Nessa looked like a reasonable bowler, but I don't think he's likely to be challenging for a full-time place in the side once Cummings and Hazelwood are both back. But he had a reasonable test, and he certainly enjoyed himself with the bat in the first innings as well. And he's clearly a very popular guy in the dressing room. So good luck to him. Reward for bowling well in the Australia A game against the Lions as well. And that's really, I guess, our selection should be. But, you know, when Cummings comes back, I probably would expect it to be Nessa rather than Richardson, who drops out in the next test. So let's talk about England though. So they're all seam attack bowling attack. I think they were putting all their eggs in the it's going to swing and the lights and the conditions, and we're going to have those conditions to bowl in, where England thought the game was going to go. As we said before the test, if it swings, that's potentially five dangerous bowlers in England's arsenal. If it doesn't swing, then it's five very samey bowlers that might not be doing a great deal with the ball that the Australian batters will be able to line up fairly comfortably and start to deal with very comfortably. And that's pretty much what happened in the first innings. Not much happened with the ball. Therefore, it just became five guys bowling low 80s, which, you know, maybe, and even towards the end of it, they were bowling in the 70 miles per hour bracket. It's not really that going to trouble top class test batters very much, or even adequate test batters very much. So in fact, because it didn't really swing, England ended up bowling more overs of spin than they probably anticipated, over 30 overs, 30 odd overs plus in the odd sight of England, one of England's quick bowlers bowling off spin as well. Robinson bowled a few overs of off spin, but even if you look into the second innings, Root and Milan between them bowled 12 overs, which was more than Anderson and Broad each. They each bowled 10. So Milan and Root together bowling more than Anderson, more than Broad. That doesn't seem like it was the plan going in. And I think England, comprehensively, we can say, got their selection wrong with the bowling attack. But did England lose the game because of the bowling attack? Well, a little, perhaps, because of how they bowled in the first innings. But yet again, England didn't score enough runs in this test when they batted, particularly batting first. Some great stuff on Twitter by a guy called Simon Gleave, who's a sports analyst, and he's been looking at the number of times that England score over 400, and the number of, and it's that effectively his position is that you, if you score 400, then you're in a good position to win a test. If you don't score 400, then you're not. I've had a look back at England's tests since the start of the 2017-18 Ashes Tour. So there's 52 test matches in that time. In that time, England have won 22 tests and lost 22 tests, drawing the other eight, of course. In that first knock, so batting first, batting second, only five times have England declared. Now, that might be a tactical strategy thing where teams tend to declare less than they used to when I was a lad watching cricket. But nonetheless, in that time, so 400 has been passed 10 times. England have won six of those games and only lost one of those games, which you know, tells you if you're going to score 400, England's record is a 60% win rate. So, yeah, Simon Gleave, I think you're damn right. And looking at the other end of the telescope, though, England have scored less or fewer than 250 19 times, and they've lost 13 of those games. So, you know, England, it's obviously a lot of scores between 250 and 400 in around the 300 mark, which is kind of adequate. It gives yourself a chance of a result. But England are just not putting the runs on the board in the first innings to give them to be ahead of the game. And indeed, very often, in fact, twice as often, they're scoring in the danger zone of less than 250, which means that they're putting themselves under pressure for the rest of the game. Yeah, of course, you do get occasionally low scoring tests where 250 is a cracking score and is probably going to put you in a winning position. England have won four times when they've scored fewer than 250 runs their first time out. But in the majority of time, on most test wickets, against most test teams, and I would say particularly against this Australian test team, 250 is just nowhere near enough. They were under 250 in their first innings this time, and it really was not enough runs. So England's problem is runs. The top three in that time, in those 52 tests, between them averaged 29.5 runs. So the top three are averaging less than 30 every time they bat, and they're batting for an average of 66 balls per innings. So, you know, that's not a lot. If you've got Joe Root coming in at four, the idea of Joe Root and a gun batter coming in at four, Ricky Ponting used to come in at four, Tendulkar often used to come in at four, Kohli comes in at four, you know, Kane Richardson often bats at three, but he sometimes comes in at four as well, is because the top three have seen off the new ball. It's the best conditions for batting. It's the time when the bowling attack is tired. If your openers are batting for 10 overs each, then, you know, you're seeing that Root in very quickly. You're seeing Root in before the ball is that old. You're seeing him in having to deal with a bowling attack who've taken some quick wickets. It's not enough. It's not good enough. Milan, within those 52 tests, he's averaging 42, and he's facing an average of 92 balls. So fair play to David Milan. David Milan, he's doing his job. Burns, across that, is averaging 31, and he's facing an average of 71 balls. Again, that's, you know, over the whole piece, that's kind of okay, but it's not great. Hamid, it's a small sample. He's averaging 22 and he's facing about 11 overs, 67 balls. And Crawley, he's averaging 28 and facing an average of 53 balls. Crawley's figures, of course, are completely out of whack because of his massive 267, which skews nearly everything else. But we'll come back to him and we'll come back to Burns in a little bit when we think about the team. So I think for the second test, after the second test, for the third test, England needs to think about some changes. I think the performance wasn't good enough. And I think as an element of change needed to send a signal to some people in the dressing room that it's not good enough to play like that. And there needs to be some improvement. It's hard on a tour, can be hard for the captain, and it can be hard around the group. But I think it's got to be done. I think it has to be done. I think England have to signal to the squad that we can't accept that level of performance. And if people weren't performing to the plan, people weren't doing the basics, then I'm afraid there's a question that they're going to have to sit a test out and they're going to have to try and regain their place. With the batting, so let's look at the opening batting. Burns clearly is struggling. He did better in the second innings here and he got a few runs. And you know, once he gets in, he looks more comfortable. He looks more fluent, but he doesn't get in often enough. And I think the Australians have kind of got his number. The way he plays with his hands out in front of his body, he's asking to play it to slip. with the way he shuffles across in front of his stumps. He's asking to be laid before wicket, or indeed bowled round his legs. I think the Australians have got probably four or five different ways that they can get him out, and I'm not sure that that's really going to help him to continue playing in this series. Looking at his rolling average, so the last five innings he's played, and indeed the last 10 innings he's played, he's averaging below 24. He's not really in good enough form, and he's not finding his form out in the middle against a formidable Australian attack. So for me, I'm afraid Burns has to sit out. So who do you bring in? Well, the other player in the squad who can open is Crawley. But let's be honest, it's a punt. You know, his rolling average, if you're going to be fair to Burns, the last 10 innings is 12. You know, since he's had 14 innings since he scored his 267 against Pakistan, and we all thought, well, we've got a player here. We've got a player who can play a big, long innings. He scored 150 in 14 innings. He really has dropped away. His county average is in the low 30s. He's not a prolific county batter either. But we're on tour. We have who we have. He can open the batting, and I think it probably will help if England play Crawley for Burns. But let's be fair, it's a punt. It's absolutely a punt. Hamid got out to a fairly silly shot in the second innings. For the rest of the batting, Hamid got out to a pretty silly shot in the first innings and got a cracker of a ball in the second innings, which was the first time we've probably seen Hamid's low hand technique really cause him a problem with his wicket in Australia. He's done pretty well up to then, but he's looked okay, Hamid. I think he certainly should stay in the team. Milan and Root have obviously done the business. Ben Stokes is Ben Stokes, and you would want him in your side. So that's all fine. They play Ollie Pope. Nope, I'm afraid not for me. He doesn't score enough runs. His second knock, so batting in the third or fourth innings of a game, his average is below 14. He's been around long enough. He should be more established and should be making a bigger contribution. And I'm afraid his contribution the second time England go out to bat is negligible. And I don't think he can really retain his place in the side on that basis. I think he needs to go away and really think about what he's going to bring to the side. Yeah, he can score runs for Surrey. He can score runs at the Oval. He needs to score runs elsewhere, and he needs to score tougher runs in tougher situations. For me, for this series, I'm afraid Pope is done and shouldn't play. I would replace him with Bairstow. I think Dan Lawrence would be a big, big risk. And again, I think he's right-handed, but similar to Rory Burns, I'm not sure his technique is probably going to stand up to the scrutiny of the Australian bowlers. So for me, that brings me back to Bairstow. He is experienced, of course. He's played 80-odd tests, I think. He's been in fairly modest form in 2021. His five innings average is about 25. His 10 innings average is 21. But his career average is in the high 30s. First time he goes out to bat, it's in the mid-20s, the second time he goes out to bat. So for me, I mean, I think he could barely contribute less than Pope has contributed. So I think he would be a better bet. And he I think at least is a bit of a scrapper, and he's good in the field. And he's somebody that Root clearly enjoys playing with. So I think that might help Root to some extent as well. So for me, Bairstow will come in for Pope. Now, the big conundrum is Butler. Joss Butler obviously had a terrible test behind the stumps, really poor. Yes, you can take big, long diving catches of the spectacular variety, and he did very well, and can't knock that. He took some good catches. But that's not much good to your team, taking, you know, the percentage of really difficult chances if you're not taking the simple chances. And again, he seems to struggle behind the stumps for me, and I'm afraid isn't good enough. However, you know, Ben Foulkes isn't on the tour. He was with the Lions, and as far as I'm aware, he's flown home. For me, I think England not picking their best wicketkeeper is silly. And Foulkes can bat as well. You know, Foulkes is a fine bat. Going in at seven will be absolutely fine, but he's not there. And let's be fair, Butler did put in a good shift in the second inning. So his first innings was the opposite of his second innings. The first innings he was being set up for an obvious, you know, please play a big booming cover drive. Oh, and he obliged, and it was out. And it was such an obvious trap that we could all see it coming. Second innings he worked much, much harder. And as Joe Root said in his post-match comments, that's the kind of application that England needs. So despite his keeping being poor, mainly because Folks isn't there to put his place under pressure, I think I'd probably keep Butler in the next test and say, well, let's start taking these regulation catches, please, and let's see if we can build from there. But I'm afraid another test like that behind the stumps, and we're going to have to think about giving Bairstow the gloves and think again about who else comes into the side to bat in the top six. On the bowling side, let's try and have a bit more of a balanced attack this time. Let's not put all our eggs in the basket. It's not a day-night test, so we probably won't have the draw of trying to just have a samey attack, which will really exploit conditions. That didn't work in Adelaide, and it certainly won't work at the MCG in a normal kind of daytime test match. So let's have a spinner in the team. Root is a fine spinner, but with the injuries that he's picked up in that test, let's be sure that he'll be able to bowl fully. As for me, I don't think Leach can come back into this side. So you've got Don Bess. Why take him on the tour if you've got no intention of playing him under any circumstances? For me, Bess can bat at number eight. He can hold a bat. He's perfectly fine batting at eight, and he's an off spinner. Australia has got a team full of left-handed batters. The off spinner, turning the ball away from them, causing problems. And it's also somebody, it makes it much more difficult for Australia to look to generate rough with Mitchell Starc going left arm over and rough for Nathan Lyon to bowl into, because it's also rough that Dominic Bess can bowl into as well. And am I saying Bess is the same quality spinner as Nathan Lyon? I'm not. But Bess is a wicket-taking spinner. He's not going to give you perhaps as much control, but then Leach wasn't given control either. And I think with the left-handers, I think Bess is probably a better bet, and I think he adds a little bit to the. It gives us another option with the bat as well, better than Leach. I mean, Leach is a doughty fighter with the bat. There's no doubt about it, but he's not really likely to chip in with meaningful runs when you're building an innings. Whereas I think Bess may. So for me, Bess comes into the side. I know that's a risk, and he may well get the treatment. I'm sure they'll go try to give him the treatment and knock him out of the attack. But I think for me, it's somewhere England have to go. And if they're not going to bowl Bess, given the Australian left-handers, given where Leach is, given how we've seen what an England side without a spinner in it looks like against this Australian batting lineup, then they really probably shouldn't have bothered taking him in the first place. And they should have taken another backup spinner. And we should be talking about maybe a Matt Parkinson coming into the side at this point, which clearly would be a risk. But if they're not going to play Bess, then, you know, why take him? It's a ridiculous selection decision, another ridiculous selection decision. So that gives us three quick bowlers. Wood has to play, surely. Looked like a predetermined plan to rest him for the day-night game. All the guys that will swing it around, they'll be fine. We won't need Wood's pace. Well, that clearly didn't work. Wood, I think, has to come back into the side. So if we're playing Wood and we're playing Bess, then that means two of Wokes, Robinson, Broad and Anderson, have to miss out. I have to be honest, at this point, I'd be tempted to leave out both Broad and Anderson. Root's comments at the end of the test match, and he said them to a number of media outlets. And interestingly, then Pryor and Alistair Cook, our UK TV coverage, has got Matt Pryor and Sir Alistair Cook in the studio talking about this as well. Root effectively said we bowled too short. We didn't bowl the length we needed to bowl. We didn't bowl the length Australia bowled. And indeed, we bowled the length we bowled last time we were in Adelaide and got smacked about then as well. So surely that then was something that the bowling attack was told to do before they went out there. And they weren't doing that. So therefore, Root had to set his field for a different bowling strategy. And effectively, the bowlers then took control away from Root and took it on themselves. Now, let's be honest. Again, as well, I think, you know, Pryor and Cook's comments after Root's comments were, well, you know, you tried telling Jimmy and Stuart Broad what length to bowl, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they've got, you know, X hundreds of test wickets between them. But it's like the captain has to be able to tell the bowlers what the bowling strategy is. Of course, there's discussion that it's a team game and the strategy is probably a team decision. But once the decision is made by the captain, then surely the players have to do it. So I worry about the dynamics of the side for Root with Broad and Anderson in it. I think that's tricky. So I would be tempted to leave both Broad and Anderson out and replace them with Wood and Bess for the next test. That said, Chris Wokes' bowling hasn't been great so far in this series. And on a pure bowling performance, I think he's the one who's probably most likely to, well, he's the one who's kind of almost bowling himself out the side at the moment. He's going for more runs than the others. Because one thing you can say about Jimmy in particular, he was very, very economical. Stuart Broad was pretty economical. Wokes, not that economical. And he's not really looking like he's going to take wickets. So maybe with Wokes' bowling performance, there's a reprieve for one of Jimmy or Stuart Broad. I think with Bess, who can bat at eight, I think that's probably an okay pick. I think otherwise England would struggle to have somebody to bat at eight. You'd be asking Robinson to do that, and that's at least one place too high for me. So a reprieve perhaps for Broad and Anderson. Which one of those would I pick? I think I would probably pick Broad. I think he has likely to get more success against the left-handers. And I think he's probably brings the slightly more exuberant kind of grit and team fight in him. I think Jimmy is he's a great competitor and a great bowler, but I think he's often on his own terms, and often it's about his performance which drives him, whereas I think Stuart Broad maybe gives a little bit more to the team. That might be heresy and harsh to say, but for me at the moment on this tour, in this situation, if it's a choice between Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson, despite how economically Jimmy bowled and some terrific deliveries in there as you always get from him, I think for the balance of the side I would probably go Broad. But it's a very, very difficult selection for England going into the next test. There's a huge amount of disappointment I think around English cricket about how this tour is playing out. It feels like, you know, deja vu all over again for Ashes tours past, where, you know, this Australia team is a good team, but they had, you know, the captain of the team was replaced on the eve of the first test. A new captain who then couldn't play the second test. Okay, Steve Smith captained, which is probably what Australia would really love to have full time anyway. But no Cummings, no Hazelwood. That's half their, you know, vaunted attack not available in this game. And it wasn't really any closer than the first test. England fought a bit harder at the back end to try to stave off the inevitable. But actually, there was no real point in this test where you thought England were ahead of the game, where you thought England and Australia were tussling to see who was going to win. It was always a question of whether England could survive. So in these circumstances, I think England need to take a real look in the dressing room. Needs to be, and I think Justin Langer's kind of sometimes criticised thoughts about elite honesty. I think there needs to be some elite honesty in the England dressing room. And I think there needs to be some changes for the third test. The MCG is a Boxing Day test. It's a great occasion, but it's a terribly difficult test for a touring side to win. It's particularly difficult for England to win. It's a real bear pit of a place to play cricket for a touring side, particularly an England touring side. So let's be honest. It's an uphill struggle now for England to get anything out of this series, but I think they need to maybe roll the dice a little for the next test and make some changes and say to one or two people who've not been performing not performing, you're given the opportunity, you have to perform. Yeah, and no one's given, you know, nobody wants chop and changing every match to match for you know, people then get the fear that one bad innings or one drop catch or one poor spell is going to lead to a spell out of the side. But let's be honest, there's been more than the odd poor performance or poor session or poor bowling spell in this England team, and some changes are needed. So it's you know, England cricket feels again like, thanks to an Ashes tour, we're heading down towards rock bottom. We're way short now in the World Test Championship table as well. 8 points docked because of the overrate. I'm not sure if there'll be any. I think England are okay with their overrates in this test, but almost you can kiss goodbye to any sense of finishing in the top two of the World Test Championship, unless there's some miraculous turnaround in England's fortunes over the next couple of years. It's just not going to happen. So England really need to think about how they're going to build for the future. And I think some difficult choices maybe need to be made by Root and Silverwood. And if they're not prepared to make them, particularly Silverwood, because I'm not sure who could possibly replace Root as captain, because there's virtually nobody else who's actually secure in the side as a player, let alone potentially as a captain. I think if the England camp can't cope and deal with this situation, then maybe there needs to be some thought about who can. You know, the underlying long-term reasons, the structural problems in English cricket are bearing fruit. They are coming, they are the chickens that are coming home to roost. It's great to see that there'll perhaps be some more championship cricket in the heart of the summer in 2022 in England. I think that's much needed. But there needs to be a long, hard look when England get back from Australia about, are we doing enough to prepare ourselves to play test cricket in difficult environments? Are we doing enough to bring through spinners? Are we doing enough to identify potential test talent at an early enough point in their career? And are we doing enough to nurture them? Are we doing enough to give people a step up? Are we playing enough AA game Lions cricket? why are there no tours where the Lions team can play touring A-sides? In England, there should be more focus on higher standard, more quality Red Bull cricket in England. But how the ECB fit that into their now very, very crowded schedule, I don't know. I wonder, as this thinker on English cricket, as this person commenting on it, if what England need to do is they really need to embrace a two-code approach to Red Bull and White Ball cricket. And maybe think about players that just play one form or the other. Rugby union, rugby league exist side by side, though they split to do that. But I wonder if there's a way that English cricket can contain it all within one sport, one game. But actually, we need to be thinking smart about having a Red Bull summer and a White Ball summer. And if the twain don't meet, well, maybe that's what we have to do in order to continue to be competitive in both forms and formats of the game. It seems sad to say that. You may be asking people like Ben Stokes, Mark Woods, David Milan to choose which code they're going to play. And that's going to be difficult. And that might be tricky if all the best players choose to go White Ball, because that's where the 365 days a year money is. But England have got to do something, because there are particular performance issues that are causing problems on this tour, but they are a microcosm of the wider structural problems in English cricket that are causing England to be and to become actually quite a poor test side. And that's very sad given the number of players and the resources available to English cricket. English cricket never has an excuse to be a poor test side for very long. And unfortunately, this is where England appear to be at the moment. So pretty sad, pretty downbeat England fan here. Let's hope that there's some good thought goes into the selection for the Boxing Day test. Let's hope that we see some more performances from more players, and let's hope that England can try to pull something out of this series. But let's face it, 2-0 down in Australia is a hell of a difficult position to be in, and anything England can get from this series now will be very, very welcome, and frankly quite a surprise. So there we go. Let me know what you think. It's been a tough watch, the last two tests, for England cricket fans. If you're not an England cricket fan, Australian fan, India fan, Pakistan fan, whatever, please let us know what you're seeing when England take to the field, and what you would have England do. You can listen to this show every week, either as a podcast or on YouTube or indeed on Twitch. And you can follow us on Twitter at @SFTV_cricket, where my moanings and wailings are live during the test matches when I can. So thank you very much for joining us today. And I look forward to seeing you again on another edition of the Sports Fans TV Cricket Fan Show. Thank you.